Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Self is the one inside you were always meant to be. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I am a recovering alcoholic. I am a recovering adult child of an alcoholic and dysfunctional family. And I am the captain of this hot mess of a ship, where we talk about serious shit, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. So today we are diving deep with Tammy Sullenberger. She is a certified IFS therapist. She's the host of the podcast, The One Inside. She's the author of the book, The One Inside. And you are in for a damn treat. This woman is a wealth of knowledge, both personally and professionally. And of course I get her to open up. She said to me at the end, she goes, I don't know if I've ever opened up that much on another podcast. And I said, yeah, that's my superpower. That is my superpower. So I've actually been sitting on this interview for a bit. This was recorded on December 4th, which was the same day that I released my episode, letting y'all know that I was going to be taking a break from the podcast after having quite an epic meltdown the week prior. And the realization of the severity of the emotional exhaustion and burnout that I was experiencing and had been experiencing. And so needless to say, I was not in the best place emotionally, mentally, when I had this conversation with Tammy. I mean, you can't tell. You can't tell in the interview or anything. But just know I was quite a hot mess at this moment in time. I guess there was some relief that I was experiencing for having made the decision to take this break, but I was still very much feeling lost, confused, hopeless, helpless. But it was just so interesting listening back on this conversation as a reflection of the growth and healing that has occurred since then, specifically related to some of my parts that you'll hear me bring up in the conversation that I've connected with, gotten to understand better, and gotten them to chill out a little bit. So prior to this interview with Tammy, I want to share about that with y'all today, about the progress that I've made with my parts, as well as just give you an update about where I'm at both personally and professionally since we last spoke at the beginning of the year. Now, it has been a little while since we've had an episode that specifically explains what IFS is, so I do just want to provide a brief overview of IFS for anyone who may not be familiar. So, IFS is a form of psychotherapy that was developed by Dick Schwartz in the 1980s, and I'm sure many of y'all are familiar or have heard of his book, No Bad Parts. And it is essentially taking this concept that we have in ACA of this inner family, but to a much deeper level, to a much deeper understanding. So it sees our minds as made up of these parts, and each of these parts has its own unique role. And so instead of having these four traditional parts that we have in ACA of the inner child, the inner teen, the inner critical parent, and the inner loving parent, there are many parts that one can have that fall into three particular categories. So first up, we've got the manager. So these are the parts that are like your personal assistant on overdrive. They try to keep everything under control, planning, organizing our lives to avoid, you know, any emotional upheavals. They are the ones making lists, planning every second of the day, all to protect us from feeling vulnerable. Then we have the firefighter. So these are the guys that jump into action when our emotions get too hot to handle. If the managers are about prevention, the firefighters are about emergency response. So feeling overwhelmed, well, suddenly you find yourself binge watching a series, diving into a tub of ice cream, you know, scrolling endlessly through Instagram. This is where a lot of our addictions, sorry, my cats are fighting right now. This is where a lot of our addiction stuff shows up. And then we have the exiles. And so these are our vulnerable parts. These are our wounded inner children. And so instead of this concept in ACA of having, you know, an inner child, in IFS, we have many inner children. And these are the parts of us that carry our pain, our traumas, our fears. And when life's bumps hit these wounds, the exiles react. And that is when our managers and our firefighters scramble to try to protect these exiles. And then we have the big S self. And this is essentially like an inner loving parent. This refers to the deeper, authentic part of ourselves. It's often described as a source of inner wisdom, of innate intelligence, a sense of connection to something larger than the ego. It represents the truest version of you, your highest potential, and guiding you towards making aligned decisions as opposed to these other parts that I just described. And the special sauce here with IFS is this concept that there are no bad parts, or as I said earlier, that there are no dad parts. That every part of us, even those parts that are destroying you, making you miserable, self-sabotaging, causing you shitloads of pain, they are doing what they think is best for you. They have good intentions, however misguided this may seem to us consciously. And so what this work is all about is getting to know them, understanding why they do what they do, understanding when they were formed and what they believe, what they're afraid of would happen if they stop doing what they do, and then letting them get to know us, because many of them don't necessarily know that we exist, that we are the age that we are, that we have accomplished what we have accomplished. They don't know that they are no longer trapped in that time that they were formed. And so it's letting them in the know that there is this big S self steering the ship and figuring out what they need from us to be able to trust us, and helping them figure out a way to exist within us that isn't so destructive or painful. So now I want to share with you about my IFS journey since recording this episode. You know, I started working with my IFS therapist, I think it was sometime in the summer. And I got to be honest, though, it wasn't until the sessions that I've recorded since this interview with Tammy that I would say I've like really truly connected with my parts. And the reason that I just want to say this is because, you know, for some people, this modality may come naturally. And for others, including myself, it didn't. And so if you're like me, just be patient. You know, it takes time, and that doesn't mean that it's not working. So here's some context that I'm just going to provide you in a nutshell before I start going into these parts. And that is that I had a series of events occur starting in May of 2023 that triggered my abandonment trauma. And it turned out that a bunch of shit that I thought I had worked through, I actually hadn't. And that started probably the most painful 20 months of my life, me living in survival mode and stuck in it, stuck in procrastination, self-sabotaging behaviors, lack of motivation, lack of creativity, brain frog. We got dad parts and we got brain frogs, like super easily overwhelmed, overthinking, you know, constantly needing to numb out and distract myself and really just unable to move forward. You know, I was able to get the bare bones done of getting this podcast done and showing up for my community, but really unable to do any of the things that were really going to move me and my career forward, and also just finding very little enjoyment out of life. So pretty much just miserable and feeling like, you know, what the fuck? I'm 5 years into my healing journey. I should be further along. And look, you have this podcast and you have this community. You know, you're a fraud, the imposter syndrome, and then just doing whatever I needed to do to numb out and dissociate, to deal with all of this. And what I've really come to understand is that this really was functional freeze, which honestly has allowed me to show myself so much compassion for why things went the way that they went over this rocky road. And I really want to dive into functional freeze in future episodes. But I'm really, really happy to announce y'all that I'm finally thawing out. I'm thawing out. And I want to share with you about these parts that I've connected with that I think have really allowed for this shift to finally happen after a really long and painful road, folks. So the first part that I connected with was I was taken to a scene of the little girl, like 8 years old, sitting on the steps listening to her parents fight. So this is the hypervigilance part of me. This is the part of me that is constantly on guard. This was the little girl who needed to hear every single word that her parents were fighting about because it makes her feel safe. That information keeps her safe. This is the part of me that felt alive in chaos. Like, these are the roots of the laundry list trait of, you know, we become addicted to excitement. This is the part of me that was addicted to the dysfunction that was going on within the home. This is the part of me that got an adrenaline rush from sitting on the steps and listening to her parents fight. But this is also a part of me that has so many qualities that I truly love about myself. And this was actually an extremely emotional session from a positive perspective, like a ton of tears, but it was just so much appreciation and gratitude for this part of me, because this is the part of me that is extremely curious and inquisitive. This is the truth seeker part of me. This is the deep thinker. This is the person that wants to know everything about everything. And I really love all of those qualities about myself. And so it was a really beautiful moment of just letting her know how much I fucking appreciate her. So then the next part that I connected with, I was taken to a scene. This was in the seventh grade. So this was already, I was already the school slut, the girl that no one wants to be friends with. And it was me getting ready to sneak out of the house to go see my boyfriend. As I've shared before, in case you've never heard, my parents found out that I was sneaking out of the house. So they put a security system on the house to keep me in, not to keep people out. Then I was going out the window in the kitchen, and then they figured that out. So then they put a motion detector in the kitchen. So this night in particular, it was, I don't know what time it was, you know, 11:30 or 12, and I was getting dressed, and I guess my mom heard me getting ready. And so she came into my room and asked me like what I was doing. And I'm just telling you the whole full story. I didn't like go through the full scene when I was in my session, but just to give you the context. So my mom came in and, you know, saw what I was doing. And then, you know, we talked for a while, and then I told her that I wasn't going to sneak out, but I was going to sneak out anyways. And the only way that I could get out of the house was if I went out my bathroom window. And there was no way for me to get back into the house, guys. And that just like shows the level of desperation, of extreme impulsivity. This is clearly a firefighter part of me. And this was the part of me who would go to any length to numb out, whether that was through, you know, boys or drugs and alcohol, to not feel the shame of my existence. This was the part of me that was protecting an exile that thinks that like we are such a loser, that there's something inherently wrong with us, desperate to not feel, desperate for any sort of connection. And I think that this is also when the belief that a relationship or a guy was going to save me or complete me, because literally I had no friends at this point in time. And the only way that I was able to get through each day as being the girl that was so ostracized at school was knowing that later that night that I was gonna, you know, get to sneak out and smoke pot and hang out with my boyfriend. And so in that session, I had the opportunity to, you know, confront my parents and tell them the reason that I'm sneaking out, the reason that I'm doing this is not because there's something wrong with me, but because there's something wrong with you, that you've made me the problem when you're not addressing your problems. You know, I was the child communicating the problem. I wasn't the problem child. And then the next part that I connected with was an exile. And, you know, around 6 years sober, finally on a conscious level, accepted the fact that there was nothing that I could do to get my mom sober. And that didn't mean that she didn't love me, because as a kid, I thought that eventually my mom would get sober because she loved me so much. And so I knew that this consciously was not the case. But through this IFS session, I realized that that exile, that wounded inner child, had not fully accepted that, had not come to terms with that. And this was the little girl inside of me that is devastated that we didn't save mom, that we couldn't save her, and feels like that must mean she doesn't love us. This is one of my core wounds, if not like the biggest core wound, and something that I thought that I had worked through prior to entering this shit show season of my life. I think there's still more work to be done there with this particular part, but it was huge headway to be able to connect with her. And then the final part that I connected with, and you're going to get to hear me talk about this part in my conversation with Tammy. So this is the part that shows up at the very beginning of every single damn IFS session that I have, which is this part that thinks that we can't do this, that we're not going to be able to connect to a part, that this isn't going to work out. And what this part told me is that if we're not fucked up, if we're not like in therapy, if we don't have something to fix, then no one's going to pay attention to us. And so this is the identified patient part, right? Like so much of my identity wrapped up as a kid, so much of the attention that I received, you know, I went into a negative attention route, right? Like getting sent to therapy at 9, becoming the girl with no friends in the 7th grade, and then being the girl that got sent to rehab in the 8th grade. Like so much of my identity was just wrapped up in being the problem, in something being wrong with me, right? Like that's how I learned to get attention. And so there's this part of me clearly that is afraid that if we heal or if this works, then we're invisible. No one's going to pay attention to us. And that was actually just a couple weeks ago that I connected with that part. And so there's still more work to be done with these parts. And I'm sure there's more parts to connect with and find and get to know. But as I said, connecting with these parts has been a really big part in helping me to thaw out of this functional freeze that I've been in for so long. And so in my last episode to you, I shared about having yet another little mini meltdown at the beginning of January, but then that led me to having this spiritual experience and vision to relaunch this podcast, sharing everything that I've learned and experienced since launching this podcast, as well as, you know, turning this into a well-oiled machine with processes and procedures so I don't always feel like I'm, you know, just treading water. And I was in like, let's fucking go mode when I was recording that. And I was thinking, you know, I can get all this shit done, ready to roll and relaunch in like a month or two, right? Like that should be enough time. And then a few days later, my nervous system was like, whoa, that idea of a month or two sounds rather overwhelming. We are still very much frozen. Like you've been in a trauma response for almost like 2 years, girl. Like you can't snap out of this in a matter of a few days. Like it's literally impossible. And so it then became a matter of we have to take this a day at a time. And what is most important is getting you to feel safe in your body again, getting nervous system capacity, getting you regulated. And this doesn't happen overnight. It can't happen overnight. And we need to be gentle with ourselves and we need to have compassion for ourselves. And so it just became a matter of, I'm just going to try to take care of myself as best as I can today. And as I continued to do that, I could take care of myself a little bit better the next day. And then at the end of January, I got the flu and I was sick as a dog for like a week. And it probably took me 2 weeks to like fully recover. But in hindsight, it almost feels like this was a sort of final purge, fingers crossed on that, fingers crossed, a final purge of this dark night of the soul that I've been going through, because I just came out of that being able to show up for life in a way that I have not been able to in a long ass time, guys, like years. Physically, mentally, emotionally, you know, I have been able to have discipline again. I've been able to establish morning routines. I've been doing this morning routine of breath work and prayer every single morning. I haven't had a dysregulation bomb go off in my apartment in probably like 6 weeks. I am cooking for myself again and enjoying it. My screen time has gone down like 50%. I am able to watch TV shows and actually be fully engaged in the show. And actually a few weeks ago, I had dinner with one of my best friends of over 16 years. We got sober around the same time. And she made a comment to me at dinner just about how much she could notice a difference in my energy. And she specifically called out that when we were at my apartment before we went to dinner watching a TV show, she noticed how I was just able to sit there and watch the show. And I didn't need to have my phone in my hand and I didn't need to have the remote in my hand. And the biggest thing though, I have this list that I've been keeping of ways that I can see that I'm healing. The biggest thing is that it has been almost 4 weeks now where I haven't had that sense of impending doom, that sense of panic, that feeling like we are never going to feel better ever again or ever be happy, punch me in the gut. And that is something that I experienced at least once a day for almost the past 2 years. So that is a damn miracle. And then from a work perspective, also since having the flu, I mean, my productivity level has surged. I am actually able to focus to get shit done. The days are going fast. I have been able to tackle tasks that have been on my to-do list for years. Yes, not exaggerating, years. Tasks that have felt so scary, tasks that I have felt so much resistance towards. You know, creating social media content hasn't been this overthinking ADHD unproductive hellhole that it's been for quite some time. I'm getting a lot of things done, but I'm not beating the shit out of myself for when I don't get everything done during the day. Because guess what? Every single day, I'm not getting every single thing done on my to-do list, and that's okay. And I'm just generally feeling like not only that I can do this, but that I want to do this. So I'm hoping, I'm planning to start recording episodes for this relaunch soon. But just in closing, you know, the general message that I want to convey is that it is okay to not be okay. It is okay to take care of yourself. It is okay to make taking care of yourself your first priority. It is okay to take things a day at a time. It is okay to feel like you don't have it figured all out. It is okay that healing takes time. And if you are currently in a dark night of the soul yourself, I want to promise you that there is deep purpose in your pain. If you're anything like me, the only way that I've ever been able to experience significant growth and transformation in my life is through experiencing excruciating amounts of pain. That is the only thing that has ever worked for me. And I have to say that there hasn't been a single time where I haven't come out of that grateful for that pain. And I got to tell you, this time I was thinking, is this going to be different? Maybe I won't make it out of this time. But I have, or rather I am. You know, I'm not fully on the other side of this mountain, but I'm getting there. And I know wholeheartedly that I will be a version of myself that I could not have become had it not been for experiencing this pain. And that I am going to be able to help a lot of people by sharing all about this pain and all about what comes on the other side of that pain in my raw, vulnerable, and motivational roasting kind of way. So that is all for me today, folks. Let's get on with the damn show with Tammy. But I will be back soon and we'll continue to play some oldies but goodies of the over 180 episodes that I have in the backlog. You'll still continue to get new episodes of Shit Show Saturday every Saturday. And if you're looking for me while I'm gone, well, you know where you can find me. Q, let's talk about why you, yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show, my online support community where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups. This is a 24/7 support system at your fingertips with a bunch of recovering shit shows just like me. And I have a few announcements that I wanted to let you guys know about. So number one, our Monday night group is a book club group. So this is at 8:30 p.m. Eastern every Monday. And we are about to start a new book this upcoming Monday, March 3rd, which will be The Myth of Normal by Gabor Mate. There's no homework for this group. We just read for about 20 to 25 minutes, and then we just open it up for discussion. We also have a new small group that recently started called Employment Struggle Sesh. And so that is every other Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern. And this is a group for you to share, get support, get advice, vent on anything and everything employment related. And then the final thing is that I will be opening up our Thursday night group again for 8 of you potential shit shows for our March 6th group. So I will be sending out a newsletter this weekend, and the first 8 people that reply will get an opportunity to attend our group. And the requirements here are, and this is in order to maintain the, you know, group safety, are that you have to have your camera on, you need to use your real name, and you have to be willing to introduce yourself at the beginning of the group. You don't need to share, but you need to be at least willing to say hi. And so again, I'll send out a newsletter this weekend. If you aren't subscribed to my newsletter, you can find a link to that in the show notes of this episode. But why wait for next Thursday, folks? Don't you want to get in on this book club and in on this amazing community? You know, it is no mistake that the first laundry list trait states that we became isolated and afraid of people. And healing requires that we come out of isolation and learn to be around safe people. And I can assure you that there are certain aspects of healing and insights to be gained
that you can only attain by being in a group of peers around other shit shows who are on the same healing journey as you, that you can't get sitting in your therapist's office, okay? So how about you just damn the joint already? You can quit after a month if you don't like it, okay? See the link in my bio. Just do it already. Yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever. And there's like hundreds, if not thousands of you out there that I know have been wanting to join for probably at least over a year. Some of you have probably been wanting to join for like 2 years. So let's just do it already, okay? Next, give me a little follow on Insta, on TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, 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 please give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. All right, y'all. Well, we're in for a damn treat. We have the one, the only, Tammy Sullenberger, host of The One Inside. I'm glad we could do this.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Super, super excited. I'm already excited just from our conversation.
Yeah, as you can tell, I think I kind of gather this from you too, that you're just kind of, there's one version of you, like you get what you get. There's no like warm-up period. Yeah, there's no warm-up with me.
I love it. I actually thought that when we were talking, I was like, I totally do this to people too. I just jump in and just start talking and I'm like, I love it.
Okay, here's where I like to start. When was the moment that you realized that your childhood screwed you up a lot more than you initially thought it did?
Okay, so
if you're about to tell me you had a perfect childhood, we'll just end.
No. This, I'm going to actually tell you the opposite. Like, I was very familiar with the story of like having teenage parents, parents that were divorced when nobody else was divorced, had step siblings and half siblings, and, you know, all this, you know, a really intense relationship with my mom. So I kind of knew that story. The moment that comes up for me is my first IFS workshop, which happened to be with Dick Schwartz. They did some sort of exercise, and the exercise, I connected to the 10-year-old me, 10-year-old younger version of me, who, that was how old I was when my mom married my stepdad. So it was just me and my mom until I was 10. And then she married my stepdad, and he had a daughter who came and lived with us immediately. And then they had a daughter together. So instantly, like within 9 months, it went from me and my mom to me, my mom, my stepdad, his daughter, and a baby. And so I got introduced to this 10-year-old me who was sobbing, ugly crying, grieving over the loss of her mom. Like, I lost my mom. And that was the moment that I was like, wow, I didn't know that was there.
Did you remember that experience, that moment? Like, how would you have described that prior to that workshop?
I would have said, I could have told you the story like a reporter tells a story.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Let me tell you this story. The story is that I had a teenage mom and dad and da-da-da-da-da-da. Like I told you, I could tell you the story with no emotion. And then I could be like, yeah, I'm pretty close with my mom. But there was no heart to it. Right? Not that there's no heart to it, but there is almost like everything was a little separate from me. Like my relationships were separate from me and everything. You know, I was married. My son was 3 at the time. He's 10. He's not 10 now. He's 13 now. And so this was 10 years ago. And so I had relationships, but there was something that I could just tell you about them. There was no heart connection. And so me connecting to this 10-year-old and getting all these feelings, it was like, wait, there's a lot of feelings in here that I have not dealt with before.
That's what I always say, that like when I would talk about my childhood, it was like I was a reporter outside of a burning house, but like the burning house is mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. That's great. Because those parts of us have to do that. Yeah. Are there parts of me that are like, you know, and we learn, and my guess is from what we've talked about, you have parts that learn really young. How do I show up in spaces? How do I show up in my preschool, my elementary school, with friends, with teachers? How do I do that with what just happened, right? If it was, for me, it was a lot of like going back and forth between my mom and my dad and, you know, feeling like this leftover. And so all this stuff happening. And how do I go to school on Monday and do ABCs and 1-2-3s? How I do that is I become a reporter. I become disconnected from all of it so that I can go to school and paint the picture and be the nice girl that everybody likes. You know, these are my parts that help me deal with the pain.
So you were already a therapist at that point?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And so what led you to going to this workshop?
Yeah. So I actually was in a I was in a different workshop and the woman started talking about being curious. And she was talking about this new therapy. At the time, IFS was, you know, 20 years old or something like that. But I had never heard of IFS before. And so she started talking about this new popular therapy that was everyone was talking about in Boston. And what if we were more curious? And that was the thing that I was like, so part of me was like, ooh, I want to do what all the popular kids are doing, right? There's that part of me that still wants to, you know, a 17-year-old that wants to do what the popular kids are doing. And then this other part of me that was like, okay, I'm not curious, right? I've learned to, we challenge thoughts, we change behavior, what's being reinforced. You know, this is how I do therapy. And I was like, I'm never curious about what's happening for me. Why am I eating all these cookies? I'm never curious about that. Or why is this client not helping them be curious about what they're doing that they don't want to be doing? So that's so interesting. Like just noticing like a softening and a relaxing that happens in me when I just think about what would it be like if I was curious about that? Not just for my clients, but for myself.
Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ADULTCHILD for 15% off today.
And so that led me to look up what IFS was, which led me to go to the workshop.
And what sort of therapy were you, like modalities were you using at that point?
Yeah, so I was trained in DBT, so dialectical behavioral therapy. I was trained in that, and then I was running DBT groups, which I actually really liked, like teaching people skills like mindfulness skills, emotional regulation skills, relationship skills. And so I really liked that. And then, but in school, in grad school, I learned cognitive behavioral therapy. So that's what I was. I was a cognitive behavioral therapist and DBT, which is a good combination. And that's the type of therapist I was.
In school, did you learn about ACEs?
No.
Of course not. Did you learn about complex PTSD?
Yeah. I mean, I think but only in like my DSM class. Like, so we call it the DSM class, where you basically had the DSM and we would study all of the different diagnoses. And so, or diagnoses. And so we would study all of that and kind of memorize all of the symptoms, because then, you know, when I have a client come in and they say, okay, here's my symptoms, I know how to diagnose. So
but
that
it's
was
not
the
in
class.
The DSM.
PTSD is in the DSM.
Complex PTSD isn't.
Oh, yeah. So no. PTSD, yeah. But then in my, it's interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is in the, whatever the international version thing is, but it's like, of course it's not, because it's like, in my opinion, I think that it is the root of so many mental illnesses, right?
Interesting. What I remember diagnosing, PTSD could never be the primary diagnosis. Like mm-hmm. you had to diagnose with a symptom like depression or anxiety. Like these are the symptoms mm-hmm. that are the diagnosis that the insurance companies would pay for. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I remember it. So it might not be exactly right. It's been a long time since I've done that. But that's kind of how I remember it. That could not be the primary diagnosis. The primary mm-hmm. diagnosis had to be something else.
Yeah. I mean, it was my experience and so many of my listeners' experience of just like being in therapy for years and not having the therapist be able to identify that, like, oh, this is actually complex trauma from your childhood. Because I mean, I thought that, like, since I was never physically or sexually abused or,
You know, I never experienced war or some, you know, catastrophic event. I had no idea that experiencing the little t stuff repetitively could actually be much more harmful and impactful than one huge big T trauma.
Yeah. Someone, I was talking to somebody the other day about this idea of just being ignored. Mm. Let's just think about what it feels like to be ignored. And then think about that if you were little and you were ignored and the pain. And it, and especially, and we know this when we talk about exiles and IFS, if you're little and you're ignored, it could be death, right? Like if I'm little and I'm ignored, then you're not going to feed me. I can't go to the grocery store and get my own food. I can't like survive. I couldn't get my own water. I couldn't get my own shelter. So this idea of just, which I'm putting in quotes, just being ignored could have, could create so many parts of us that have to deal with that, because that could feel like death. And so now as an adult, if my partner ignores me, it is going to, which is not that big of a deal, it's going to create this intense, I'm going to die if I don't deal with this feeling. And that's exactly why.
Yeah. And it's because we look at it from, we think that from an adult perspective, well, it's not that big of a deal, but we didn't have the ability to view things like that as a kid, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
We didn't have.
If you're a baby and you're ignored, major damage, major trauma happens. And you could die if you were ignored as a baby. Right?
Yeah.
You literally could die.
Yeah. And you're not like 6 years old being like, well, at least I'm not Billy down the street getting sexually abused. You know, it's not like we don't have that kind of ability to think about it in that way. Right. I have a question for you, because this was something that I thought about recently as well, was I would say that my first addiction was to the chaos and dysfunction within my home. And I was the little girl who was sitting on the steps, like getting an adrenaline rush from listening to my parents fight. And like, I needed to hear every single word, you know, that they were saying. And so I have this one particular memory that I've always felt like there's something big here, but I can't feel anything like from that moment. And I'm just wondering, like, because I went this kind of hypervigilant route, and that was kind of the predominant feeling, and so it's either like a numbness or like an adrenaline rush, I think it makes it challenging for me to get to really that painful, sad feeling that the exile is truly experiencing.
So what I would do if I was your therapist or you, I would have that image of the little girl on the stairs and see if she can notice you, self, right? Yourself. Mm-hmm. See if she can notice you. And let's see who's helping her. Like, what parts of her are there on the steps? There's the one that lugged the adrenaline one, because it was, there's a biological reaction that was happening. So of course there's adrenaline. That's fight or flight, right? There's sort of this excitement, like lots of stuff happening in her brain, right? There's lots of chemicals happening in her brain. So that part was there. But who else is sitting there on the stage or on the steps with her? And let's just slow it down and just get really curious. And then can she, the little girl on the steps, notice you and notice that you're right there? And let's just see what happens. Like, let's just see what happens to her and to her, all these parts that are around her, trying to help her, trying to deal with that. How are they doing when you show up?
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what happens there.
How do you
I'm going to say you're not going to get to the exiles without lots of self-energy mm-hmm. and all the parts that are around her, that she's a protector there. Like she's sitting on the steps, but she's still a protector. And so I would do lots of self-to-part relationship there and slow that down. I'm repeating myself, and see who's involved. And let's just see who's here. Who's here, everybody? We're not trying. The part that wants to get to the exile, we're going to ask that to leave. Or sort of take a step back. It can come behind you, but there is no urgency here. We're not trying to get to the exile. We're not trying to unburden. We're just hanging out and seeing who's involved. And that will help you go faster.
Okay. How do you help clients who have a hard time visualizing things?
Yeah. So even if you can't see her on the steps, I would start with, there's something in you that says, this is a big memory or this is a big thing. There's some part of you that's like, here's a thing. And so how do you notice that? Is it a feeling?
Yeah, felt sense.
Yeah. Is it in your body? You notice it in your body. It doesn't have to be, because a lot of people don't visualize. So it can just be a felt sense. Like, I would use whatever words you have.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, what, like, particularly, like, when you work with, you've worked with tons of people, like, what percentage of them do you think have a difficult time, like, actually visualizing thing in their brain?
Yeah, if I made up a number, because I'm terrible with numbers, terrible, I would say it's not 50%, but it's probably, like, 40%.
40. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's half, but I'd say it's a little less than half. Mm-hmm. And I would say they don't have to. Like, even if it's sort of, I notice it in my body, like I notice a feeling in my body, or there's just this sense of it. Okay, let's just stay with that. Like, however you can relate to it.
Mm-hmm. When you had that experience and at the workshop with that 10-year-old, had you ever experienced anything like that before?
No, I would say I was blended with the 10-year-old. So I was the 10-year-old, and I was feeling everything that she felt that she was never allowed to feel, mm-hmm. like the grief and the crying and the abandonment. And I was completely feeling that. So I was blended with the part, feeling the part's feelings, which I think she needed me to do. Like, she needed me to really witness how painful that was. And so it wasn't like I was unblended and I noticed the 10-year-old who was crying and I was being with the 10-year-old who's crying. Like, that's one way we do IFS, right? I'm here. I'm calm. I'm noticing my 10-year-old and she's sitting on the steps crying. That's one way. But another way is I am the 10-year-old and I'm having an embodied experience of the emotions that she was never able to have.
Mm-hmm. What sort of work had you done on yourself by that point?
Yeah. So I had done cognitive behavioral therapy, right?
What did you think your problem was?
It was not that I had lost my mom at 10, right? My problem was I ate too much food. My problem was I kind of was depressed a lot. I struggled with some depression. I would say that was my problem. I was in a relationship that I wasn't super happy in. These were my problems.
Before becoming a therapist, had you been in therapy?
I was in therapy when I was in high school because I was with a bad boy and my mom made me go to therapy. And then as soon as I broke up with the boy, I quit going to therapy.
Mm-hmm. And then was that the particular aha was just like in that workshop, or had there been another point in time where you had hit some sort of a bottom?
Yeah. I mean, I think my relationship with my husband, who we're divorced now, I think that looking back, you know, there was a couple bottoms hit, and usually it was around, because we met when I was 17, married when I was 21. And so, yeah. And so doing all this work, there are times that I was like, there are bottoms that I hit that I wish I would have taken different directions. Like, I wish I would have gone different ways. But so.
Happened the way it was supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely believe that and am grateful for, you know, everything that's happened. And, but yeah, I was in and out of therapy, but never with anybody that I stuck with or never with anything that I loved learning about psychology. Like, I loved learning about people. I loved, like, I could, you know, self-improvement and self-help. And I just loved all of that and found it fascinating. And so that almost kind of was my therapy, you know, but it was my therapy, but it kept me in my head. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't doing work, right? I wasn't healing. I was learning. And that's a very different experience than going to these places. Just like, you know, regular talk therapy, you can learn a lot and you can do some work on yourself.
Absolutely.
Definitely believe that. But it's not going to the places. I was not getting connected to that 10-year-old. And I wouldn't even have told you, right? Like I said, wouldn't have been a reporter. I wouldn't have told you that was even there.
So tell me a little bit more about your childhood. So were your parents ever married?
My biological parents were married for like a year or two, and then they split up. And then my dad, and I saw my dad like every other weekend, which is amazing. He was like 17 years old. And wow. Then
how old was your mom? 17 as well?
16. My mom
did
was 16.
Did she have to drop out of school?
Yes, both of them dropped out of school and got their GEDs. And then
what do you know about that? Like, was there, like, how did their families react?
My mom's family was unhappy and not super supportive. But my mom was really close with her dad, and he gave her a job, like a bookkeeping job, because he had a really good job. And so my mom always had a good job. And my mom was very, she was a great mom. Like I always had like, in the way of she took really good care of me. Like I always had braids in my hair. It was always like this, like a happy feeling when I think about my mom always like sort of doing my hair. That was like a happy time. And then my dad's family was very different, right? Kind of like very blue collar. And you know, I don't think that they thought twice about it. And then my dad married my stepmom when I was like 7. Who's lovely. And then they had 3 kids. They had 3 boys. And so I, throughout my whole life, I would go, you know, every other weekend, or even as an adult, you know, I go see him at Christmas and we talk once a week, and I'm pretty close with all of them. And then my mom married my stepdad when I was 10, and he had a daughter, and then they had a daughter who's 10 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm. And was that like, did you get to know him before they got married? Like, how did you feel about them getting married?
What I remember about it was that what I remember is I was a pretty happy kid. Like I was a mm-hmm. pretty happy kid. I think because of all the kind of back and forth, I just was like pretty flexible mm-hmm. and pretty happy kid. And I remember being happy on the day, but it changed pretty quickly. Like it changed pretty quickly because I don't think I knew
what the hell you're getting into.
No, exactly. Like, you know, so I'm having my mom and I lived in, we call it the beach cottage. And I remember this really happy time. But my mom's like, it was really stressful, you know, because she was single and on her own and didn't have lots of money. And so, yeah, but I have this memory of like, we each had our own types of toothpaste. Then I remember we moved into this other house and it was like, I couldn't have my own type of toothpaste. Like, I don't even know if that's a real thing, but that's the memory. It's like, I had to share the toothpaste and, you know, it wasn't just me and my mom. Mm-hmm.
And so then how did things unfold for you? Like you mentioned that, you know, you're dating a bad boy. Like what, how did things unfold in high school? And as you were, as a teenager, did you start acting out?
Oh, no. I mean, I think the acting out was like, I think I started acting out in middle school with boys, like not terrible, but just always had a boyfriend. Always had a boyfriend, was always in relationship. When I was in with a bad boy. With the bad boy. she told me that I was codependent because we had, and I'll never forget this, the therapist that I had at the time, because we, and this is still very true, but part of me, this is still very true about a part of me, that will be like, whatever you need, whatever you need. Okay, so we're going to go see a movie. And do you want to see rom-com or do you want to see some like cut them up, something, Slasher. Something. Yeah. And so like I picked the movie that he wanted to see. And I remember talking to her about this and her telling me that I was codependent. And so I think that is something that followed me, kind of like whatever you want, whatever you want, whatever you want me to be. And this is something that these parts of me still very much struggle with is, okay, who do you want me to be? And I'll be that. And so my parts, I think that's part of the protective strategy of helping me through, you know, all the different changes when I was little. And then, yeah. But then I end up with relationships actually that are not serving to me or not healthy for me, or I end up with parts that disappear in relationships. So I thought this the other day, I went for a walk with my dog and I had the thought, you don't have to be dead in order to be in a relationship. Like there's a part of me that's like, in order to be in a relationship part, I have to be dead in some way to be in this relationship. I was like, that's interesting.
That's really interesting. So tell me about some, I guess, some profound experiences that you've had in healing your own parts. Like what are some significant moments for you?
Well, we can stay on the relationship thing. I mean, please. I think this has been pretty, this idea of like, I'll say like, I'm allowed, this comes up for me and I'll hear it. Like I'm allowed to have an opinion. I'm allowed to have a feeling. I'm allowed to have a voice. And so when I hear that, I'm like, okay, there's a part of me. So that's the self-talk that I'm aware of. So I know there's a part of me that feels like she's not allowed. I'm not allowed to have a feeling. I'm not allowed to have I have to disappear. I have to die. I have to not even be here. Like, so that has been something that is something that I continue to work on. And because that feels safe. So you and I were talking before about like, we keep going towards the same type of people because we go towards our parts are trying to play out, but they're also go to what's familiar because what's mm-hmm. familiar is safe. Mm-hmm. And our parts are going to choose safe more than anything else. They need us to be safe. And so that's what they're going to choose. And so this idea of safety, if I don't have a voice, opinion, a need, then I'm safe, right? If I'm not even here, then I'm safe. And so for my system to say, wait a minute, I'm allowed to say, actually, I don't want to watch that movie. Like, actually, I really want to eat this tonight. Actually, I really want to paint this color. And these are sort of silly, small things, but when you learn to disappear, then you don't stay, right? And then you have a house full of paint colors that you don't like, or you have food that you don't like, or you always watch things that you don't like. And then you have parts that are pissed about that. And so, you know, I have parts that would be like, I'm angry about that, but I can't be angry at that person, or I can't show anger. Like, I can't show anger. So what do I do about that? So then I go to the gas station and buy a bunch of food and eat it before nobody sees me. Or I find these other ways to like express anger that feels safe to me, because it doesn't feel safe for me to say, like, I don't want to watch that stupid movie.
Have you come across any legacy burdens?
Yeah, I have this. And my mom's family is Irish. And I had this legacy burden. I'm trying to remember. I'm visual. So I can picture this woman with like a farm that was all alone in like an old shack that like all the men had been killed or were gone or had left her. So I'm trying to remember if it was around being abandoned. It was around being abandoned and needing a man to take care of you, because if you don't have a man to take care of you, you don't know how to farm. You don't know how to live. Like, you need a man. This rings true, right? For me, saying like middle school on, I was always with boys, got married really young. And so there's something about this kind of thinking about like survival or thinking about safety that's like, if I don't have a man, part of me is like, oh, I'm going to throw up. If I don't have a man, then I'm like not safe in this world. And it came back to this woman that was like dressed in these really old, like 1800s clothes that was in the shack that was like really, really scared. And all the men were gone.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah. That's nuts. Was there like a significant healing moment there?
Well, I think what feels significant was that I didn't know that was there.
Yeah.
Just like with the 10-year-old and the grief, I didn't know that was there. And so it's like, oh, like walking the dog and I hear this just pop in my head. You don't have to be dead to be in a relationship. Oh, I didn't even know that that was a thing. I didn't even know I didn't know a part of me believed that. Like, I acted that out. I lived that out. Like, I live out this message, or I live out this burden without even realizing that it's a burden that I'm carrying.
Yeah. Was it hard for you to, like, for me at first, a couple of years ago, like, I would have thought all this stuff was so weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So for you, was it a fast buy-in, or were you like, this is kind of bizarre?
Okay. So I have parts that are both. So I would say I have parts that are both. So I will often say this seems really weird. And even me saying that, like, yes, there's this woman in Ireland and the potatoes. I mean, that is so weird. I mean, that is weird. So the best thing I could say is it was the experience of that workshop and having the experience of feeling this 10-year-old and sobbing that I was like, okay, wait a minute, something is to this, because I had the experience of it. If someone told me that, I would think they were crazy, or I wouldn't think they were crazy, but I would think something, they were like a little too woo-woo and a little too weird, and I wanted nothing to do with that. So yeah, there's sometimes I think, like, given my family situation, that like me from 20-year-old me or like 25-year-old me would be like, what are you doing? What are you even talking about right now? Because no, it's not like me. Now I'm like hippy dippy and doing yoga, but that's not who I was at 25. No way. Not even close to that.
Yeah. It's kind of like going down the rabbit hole a little bit, you know, in certain ways. It's like a therapy rabbit hole almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Because once you had that, I think that's what happened, right? Once I had that experience, I was like, I want that more. I want that more, because that was so healing. And the whole, what I remember, that was so significant, because then that day I remember going out with my husband and my son for ice cream. And I was like, I felt amazing. I felt free. I felt light. And I was like, what is this? I want to do this. I want to have this. I want to feel this. And I want other people to also.
The thing that was most attractive, or I guess got me to really buy in, was the freedom that came in understanding that when I got so overwhelmed or panicked, that that was just a part of me and not all of me.
Yeah.
Like there was just something that was so freeing, you know, with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's huge. I mean, I think that's the thing is when we talk about or even introduce this idea that, okay, so there's just a part of you that's having this one feeling. Do you notice another part have a reaction to that? I mean, that feels so good. Oh, okay. So there's a part of me that feels abandoned and there's another part of me that's like, we're good. I feel pretty good, actually. I feel solid. I feel like I can feel my body. I feel like I'm right here. Okay, so what is it like for you to notice these two, right? Because it's not just the abandoned and, hey, I feel pretty good, that you're here too. And I love saying this, like, I'm here too. It's something that I say all the time. I'm here too. Whether it's I'm saying that to my system or I'm helping one of my clients say, let that part know that you're here too. It's the multiplicity, which is huge, but then the idea that I am here too, the true essence of me is here. And that's, you know, it's life changing.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any moments where you've changed your approach at all, or you felt like you had one kind of opinion or method in working with people that you had an experience that pivoted at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I completely changed the way I work with people, right? Like after doing IFS or having that experience, I mean, I came back from that initial workshop, which wasn't a training, it was just like a workshop, and began just talking to people about their parts. Okay, so I'm hearing a part of you this, I'm hearing a part of you that. And so, yeah, it really evolved as I did my own parts work and then I did more and more trainings. Mm-hmm. There was more the way I did therapy, the way I think about people, the way I think about myself is completely different. The way I think about the person in front of me and what's going on and what's happening for them, and then the way I talk to them and treat them is completely different.
Why do you think it's such an effective modality?
Because it calls out the parts of you, right? It calls out these parts of you. So if I come to therapy with my presenting problem, I want to have better relationships, then okay. So it calls out those, like, I don't want to say surface level, but like that first layer of parts of you. And then we can just name that, like we name that, and then we go deep pretty quickly. There's the parts of you, they have a job, they have a role. Can you notice them? And then what are they protecting you from? I mean, it goes deep pretty quickly. And I think it's just true. I think it's just true of, and because we're dealing with our personality. And so we're not, I mean, yeah, I want to hear about your, you know, mother-in-law and why you don't like your mother-in-law. Like, I want to hear the story of that, but I need to then go to, like, that's super surface. I need to go to, like, the parts of you involved, and I can quickly do that. I can quickly kind of go down the ladder so that you can then be more connected to all of those parts of your personality.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I was trying to think of, I was just looking there. You did this one episode that really resonated. It was, let's see here. It was the one that was about like inherited polarized parts. Do you remember that? It was with the woman.
Was it with Ann Cinco?
Yes.
So she's talking about like, that? Yeah. So she's talking about like legacy burdens.
Yeah. Legacy
burdens. Which are inherited. Polarized.
Polarized. Yeah. Can you explain that some?
Sure. So polarized parts, I think most of our parts are polarized. So polarized parts are when we think about like black and white thinking, like sort of there's, you know, angel and devil on our shoulder, or, you know, the part of me that wants to drink, part of me that doesn't want to drink, the part of me that wants to end this relationship, the part of me that can't end the relationship, keeps calling the guy. Like sort of we have these, and I'm always using sort of my hands, one side here, one energy here. And that's the polarized. Because IFS is this idea that we're a system. And in a system, there's two, right? There's one that wants one thing, and then there's this reaction or something that wants something different. So that's the polarization. We're all full of them. So if you go to therapy and you're like, I want to get rid of my anxiety. Okay, so that's a part of you that wants to get rid of your anxiety. Is there another part that feels something different? Was a part that says, oh, my anxiety helps me in some way, right? It helps me. It keeps me safe. Oh, great. Okay. So you got a part of you that says, let's get rid of it. Another part of you realize it really keeps me safe. Okay, great. So that's kind of the polarization. And so what Anne says is we can inherit, or this can be sort of, these polarizations can be passed down. So think about polarizations around money, right? We often think about that in families, that this idea of how we handle money or how we handle food or scarcity, like that can all be passed down. How we handle relationships, all of that can be, I'm using passed down, but that can all be shared.
Yeah, I mean, but isn't it kind of like all of it that, to an extent, inherited in a way?
I don't know, right? I don't know. I mean, I guess that's one of the questions, right? Is it all, I wouldn't say that all, when I think about my own system, you know, is it all inherited?
I mean, obviously there's things that happen, yeah, our own experiences, but I would think that for a lot of the major stuff, I don't know if inherited maybe, but I mean, it is all influenced by the way in which, you know, we were raised.
Well, it's interesting because you think about like this idea of being ignored, right? We're all, you know, you and I are sisters and we're both raised in this house where we're both ignored. My exiles
can manifest two different ways.
Yeah, right. Like I might have these exiles around not being seen. You might have exiles around not being heard. Mm-hmm. Right. So for me and my system, it was around, you know, the not being seen. And then I have this like spider web of parts that are all oriented around this exile. They're trying to protect this not being seen exile. And then your spider web of parts or your system of parts are all oriented around not being heard.
I don't know if you can think of an example either from yourself or from working with a client, but I was thinking about how, you know, I was sharing with you earlier about just the self-sabotage and procrastination stuff that I've been dealing with. And when we think about protectors, I think that we might consciously or on the surface think that we understand why they're doing what they're doing, like for whatever makes the most sense. But the reality is that it could be something completely different that we haven't even considered or would consider because it's rooted in such a younger self that it doesn't make any sense to our adult brains. And so I don't know if you have any, because that's what I've been thinking about with my stuff is like, clearly I'm not necessarily fully comprehending what I'm protecting myself from or like what really is the driver in these protectors' roles. Like, what are they really doing here? And so I don't know if you have examples from your own experience or for people that you've worked with of things that are just like, wow, I never would have thought about that.
I don't have any examples that come to mind, but what comes to mind is this idea of you have a part that thinks it knows or is comfortable with the narrative, right? Here's the narrative that I'm comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And so that's a part. And so I would say, I would try to help you say like, hey, thank you. Give that part a high five. Thank you. Appreciate your help. See if you can give me some space. And then have you turn towards the self-sabotage, whatever that means, the part mm-hmm. that's not letting you do whatever you need to do or whatever another part wants you to do, and ask the part. So having you ask the part what's going on, you will get a different answer than what this guy over here is thinking it is. So when you ask the part, so there is this thing that we talk about in IFS is just ask. So I'll ask you to ask the part. Mm-hmm. And then the part will tell you its story and it will not be what you think it is, right? It will usually be something really different. Mm-hmm. And usually you're also surprised by it. I mean, that's the thing that's super cool and sort of proves to me that like you couldn't make this stuff up. I mean, I don't know how many times during the week I'm like, we could not make this up. Like what just happened for that person's system? They could not have made that up even if they tried.
Yeah, it's wild.
So ask the part. It is wild. It is wild. But you asking the part, and the more, this is the other reason why IFS is so effective. The more we just sit here and think about it, we're just going to go round and round and round and round. Nothing really is going to happen. Like we could think about why you're self-sabotaging. We can get some ideas, but how different it is if we had a session where I helped you get connected and get in relationship with the parts of you that are involved in the self-sabotage. Mm. Totally different.
My overthinker part, boo!
Love her, right? So we give her a high five and have her just sit next to you. right? We can even have her come into a place of honor because she needs a place of honor, and we let her sit there and then let you do some work with your parts.
Every single time I start a session, that part is, well, we're just not going to be able to do this. You know, like, we're not going to be able to connect to anything because we're just one of those people where, like, this is going to work for everybody else, but this isn't going to work for us.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you ask that part, and you could even do this right now if you wanted to, if you ask that part, what is she afraid would happen if she let you, if she stepped back just a little bit and let you do some work?
I'm not quite sure, but I'm hoping to figure out soon. But she'll get out of the way. She will get out of the way sometimes.
But thinking parts keep us really safe, right? If we can stay up in our heads, then that keeps us really safe.
Yeah, I think that's part of what it is. I think that it thinks that I can't handle whatever is underneath there, you know, that it's going to be too painful.
So you're doing it right now, though, right? Kind of you're thinking instead of asking her, right? So you could ask her, hey, honey, what's going on? And you don't have to do it right now, but that's the difference, right? I'm going to ask the thinker, what's happening in this moment that you're not letting me do this? And then maybe even have her turn and look at you and see how old she thinks you are. Mm-hmm. She thinks you're little, then she's not going to let you do big stuff, right? So sort of building that sweet relationship with her is very different than it's probably this.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. Well, and it's being blended with the thinker, right? So this is sort of the craziness of it, right? If I'm blended with the thinker, I am the thinker. Well, it's probably this, because that's what she does. Oh, hi, thinker. Hi. I'm glad you're here. Yeah. Yeah. How you doing?
What has your experience been with utilizing psychedelics in part of the process or ketamine?
So I don't have any experience, but I just hear things on the streets that are good. So I keep hearing.
I haven't listened to it yet, but tell me about the interview that you just had with.
Yeah, I just had with Michelle Glass. So Michelle Glass, who you actually just mentioned, right?
Yes.
Who wrote this book, Daily Parts Meditation Practice. She is now, I'm not going to get this right, but she's now like certified to do some sort of psychedelic something.
I see it here.
Yeah.
She's a licensed psilocybin facilitator.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. And so, you know, what I'm hearing from her and from so many people, including Dick, is that when you take a psychedelic or when you take medicine, the psychedelic medicine in any way, you're, even if you don't know IFS, your body, your mind automatically begins to have this part to self relationship. Your parts settle back, your protective part settles back, and your self is there. You feel more self, more attuned, and you get to your exiles quicker and easier. And that's what I keep hearing over and over and over again. But there is this idea, though, that we want to also get the permission. So you want to do this pre-work before you go and take the medicine so that you're checking with your system. Do I have parts? Because parts will not let the medicine be effective. I've heard that too. If I have parts that are like, no way, I don't want you going here. Parts are so powerful, they can make the medicine not effective. So, and that's what I'm hearing. Wow. And I'm hearing it consistently. Like what I hear about using medicine in therapy is IFS is the best way to, you know, best thing to use with it. And, you know, we need to do not the integration, but sort of that before work.
To get, to make sure it's okay. Oh, that's so interesting.
To get that permission.
Huh. I never thought about that. I wanted to ask you about this. One of my friends had texted me this the other day. She said, so I read today that your protectors will ramp up and become noisier if they think that you're getting closer to the exile. Has that been your experience?
Totally. But if we do a pretty good job of having a self depart, if I self have made buddies and made friends with my protective system early on, then it's going to be a flowy because they're trusting me. So if we slow down at the beginning and say, hey, part of me that's sabotaging my work, right? The part of me that's not letting me do it, the part of me that's making me brain foggy. Like, can I get to know you? And the more you get to know that, you build that trusting relationship. It's not like I'm sneaking down the hallway to the exile. It's like that protector will walk me down the hallway and introduce me to the exile. So that's that self-depart relationship so that the protector knows how old I am, knows who I am, knows that I'm here to help them and help the exile too.
What do you think are some pretty basic tools to cultivate that relationship with our big ass self, like small things that we can do on a daily basis?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I love doing is just saying, I think I've already said this, like, I'm here. And so sometimes I'll just close my eyes because I'm so visual. So I'll get like super distracted. So I'll just close my eyes, put my hand on my heart and just say, like, who's here? Like sort of that idea, like I'm kind of checking the room. Who's here? And I can notice all the parts. I can smile and say, I'm here too. What do you need? Or just even if it's not a conversation, just having it like have my breath. Just this little tiny check-in, like turning my attention inside and saying, who's here? Hi, I'm here too. Like, I'm here too. And we're going to do this day. And let me know what you need.
How has this played out as your role as a mom?
Okay. So interestingly, it's like in our relationships, whether it's our partner relationship or our parent relationships, I think these give us so many trailheads. So as a mom, I have found these like teenage parts of me that are like angry or like have really big feelings. Like, you know, kind of like if you're a mom, it's like I have like the biggest love for you and you can piss me off like nobody else can. Like, it's really fascinating. And so it's almost like when I go pick him up today, I'm going to be all like happy because I've been doing therapy all day and la, la, la. I'm feeling very like connected to myself. And he gets in the car and he's going to be tired and hungry. And it can change my system like that, right? Like, I'm feeling namaste. And he comes in and he's like, where's my snack? I mean, not really. But so I have to be a little more attuned to myself and knowing that they're his parts, right? Mm-hmm. So his parts trigger my parts trigger his parts. And so if I can remember that those are his parts, that helps me have lots of compassion for him instead of like, oh, yay, I'm happy to see you. And he's not so happy to see me. And oh, that hurts my feelings. And so, you know, that doesn't start a good evening if that's what happens.
Well, he's 13, right?
I know, but I have parts that I don't care. I do not care. I want him to be like, hi, mom, I love you and you look pretty today. And what are we doing tonight? I can't wait to hang out with you.
How did you navigate discussions with him when you guys were getting divorced?
Yeah. So we use lots of part language, I think, first. You know, I just naturally do.
Did he get on board?
Yes. It was a very nice, very amicable. Is that the word? Amicable. And so, yeah. So he got on board with IFS pretty quickly.
Really?
Knows IFS language for sure. And then, yeah. So we talked. We started with, we just said, because at the time we're like, we're just going to separate. So dad's going to move out for 6 months. And we're going to see what's going to happen. Because that's what we thought. We actually thought he'd move out for 6 months and he'd move back in and, you know, all would be well. So we were pretty honest and just said, I don't know what, you know, we just said this was happening. And yeah, and it always wasn't that easy. And it was hard. It's hard.
It is hard.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting too. Seems like there's almost no coincidence as well that version that you had that experience, that 10-year-old, That all happened once you became a mom, you know, and I just think that so often that is when everyone's shit gets triggered. A lot of stuff comes up once they become a parent.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I think that's it's like you've had feelings that you've never had before, positive and negative, I think.
And in the relationship too, right? Because then the other person's having their shit come up too. And so that's why I think a lot of the times you talk about how things change so much when you become a parent. Obviously, it's a big change, but I think it's also both people's unresolved shit coming up to the surface.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So what does your son think about IFS?
I think he gets a little bit sarcastic about it, but he knows who Dick is and I think that he really likes, like, he liked when I wrote a book and he was very proud. Like, his teacher was like, oh, like, he was talking about how you wrote a book and he talks about writing a book. And yeah, and he likes that I podcast. I mean, I think he sort of likes those things. But then sometimes, you know, he's still like, you're just a mom and don't be annoying. There's that too.
You're just a mom. So what are you excited about now?
Well, in this moment, I'm really excited. On Friday, my partner and I are going to go. I saw this thing on this is very specific. I saw this thing on the internet that was like this really cute hotel that's on the beach. It's like 20 minutes from my house. It's having some kind of Christmas, like fun deck you know, Christmas decoration, something, something, something. And so we're going to go on Friday to that. And I'm super excited to just like say hi to the ocean, see the ocean, even though it's going to be like 20 degrees, and go to this Christmas thing. So I'm trying to think about that and not about like all the Christmas things I need to do.
Do you have any interviews that are coming up that you're really excited about?
Dick is going to be on soon. Dick will be on in a couple weeks. I'm not sure when you'll put this out, but Dick will be on. And then Gabby Bernstein is going to be on. Gabby just wrote a new book called Self Help and is all about
Started to follow me and then I reached out to have her on, but I haven't heard back. So,
well, she's promoting this book. Yeah. And so in the book is self-help as in IFS self. And so it is all about working with your manager parts. And she has lots of good, it's really good, simple, specific, and very, very helpful. I think it's a great book. I think it's going to be great for
her. Well, this has been amazing. I really appreciate your podcast so much. You have such amazing resources. And like I said, that one episode that you had recently on burnout and compassion fatigue was like the push over the ledge that I needed to give me the permission to say it's okay to take a break. So
good, good, good. Yeah. Well, I appreciate this. This has been fun. It's been fun getting to know you. And yeah, this has been fun to talk about IFS and its amazing impact on me and on the world.
Yeah. We're big fans.
At Tanger Outlets, find all the best brands all on sale every day. Step into the season's newest arrivals and save big on the styles you love. Shop Under Armour, Michael Kors, Crocs, and more. With up to 70% off plus an extra 25% off for a limited time. Hurry in for amazing deals from the brands you love. Only at Tanger Outlets.